Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18. We're starting with Chapter 18, the last verse without any purport. Don't believe everything you read. My Lord, as the original boar within this universe, you fought and killed the great demon Hiranyaksha. Then you lifted me, the earth, from the Garbhodak ocean on the end of your tusk, exactly as a sporting elephant plucks a lotus flower from the water. I bow down before you. Now we're reading chapter 19, the description of the land of Jambudvi. Now I'll read the introduction here. This chapter describes the glories of Bhardvarsha. It also describes how Lord Ramachandra is being worshipped in the tract of land known as Kim Purusha Varsha. What does Kim mean? What? Yeah, what is it? What? And Purusha, man, so why are they called Kim Purushas? Yeah, they say, what kind of person is this? I guess they look a little strange. The inhabitants of Kim Purusha Varsha are fortunate because they worship Lord Ramachandra with his faithful... What's going on there? Oh, air conditioning. Is it devotees doing it or professionals? Oh, we can't tell them to stop. Be a little quieter. Shanti. Lord Ramachandra exemplifies an incarnation of Godhead who descends to the mission of Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Dishkritam, protecting the devotees and destroying the miscreants. Lord Ramachandra exhibits the actual purpose of an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the devotees take the opportunity to offer loving transcendental service to him. One should surrender fully to the Lord, forgetting one's so-called material happiness, opulence, and education, which are not at all useful for pleasing the Lord. The Lord is pleased only by the process of surrender unto him. When Devarshi Narada descended to instruct Sarvani Muni, Manu, he described the opulence of Bhardvarsha, India. Sarvani Muni, Manu, and the inhabitants of Bhardvarsha engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the origin of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, and who is always worshipped by the self-realized souls. In the planet known as Bhardvarsha, there are many rivers and mountains, as there are other tracts of land. Yet Bhardvarsha has special significance because in this tract of land, there exists the Vedic principle of Varnashram Dharma, which divides society into four Varnas and four Ashrams. Furthermore, Narada Muni's opinion is that even if there is some temporary disturbance in the execution of the Varnashram Dharma principles, they can be revived at any moment. The effect of adhering to the institution of Varnashram is a gradual elevation to the spiritual platform and liberation from material bondage. By following the principles of Varnashram Dharma, one gets the opportunity to associate with devotees. Such association gradually awakens one's dormant propensity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and frees one from all basic principles of sinful life. Then one gets the opportunity to offer unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. Because of this opportunity, the inhabitants of Bhardvarsha praise even the heavenly planets. even on the topmost planet of this universe, Brahmaloka, the position of Bhardvarsha is discussed with great relish. All the conditioned living entities are evolving within the universe in different planets and different species of life. Thus one may be elevated to Brahmaloka, but then one must again descend to earth, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avartano Jana. If those who live in Bhardvarsha rigidly follow the principles of Arnashram Dharma and develop their dormant Krishna consciousness, they need not return to this material world after death. Any place where one cannot hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead from realized souls, even if being in Brahmaloka, is not very congenial to the living entity. One who has taken birth in the land of Bhardvarsha as a human being does not take advantage of the opportunity for spiritual elevation. His position is certainly the most miserable. In the land known as Bhardvarsha, even if one is a Sarva Kama Bhakta, devotee seeking the fulfillment of some material desire, he is freed from all material desires by his association with devotees, and ultimately he becomes a pure devotee, returns home back to Godhead without difficulty. The end of this chapter, Sri Shukadeva Goswami describes Maharaj Parikshit, the 8 sub-islands within the island of Jambudvipa. Sounds like some demons attacking. Maybe it's Agasura upstairs. Srila Shukadeva Goswami, translation. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, in Kim Purusha Varsha, the great devotee Hanuman is always engaged with the inhabitants of that land in devotional service to Lord Ramachandra, the elder brother of Lakshman and the dear husband of Sita Devi." Text 2. "A host of Gandharvas is always engaged in chanting the glories of Lord Ramachandra. That chanting is always extremely auspicious. Hanumanji and Arishtisena, the chief person in Kim Purusha Varsha, constantly hear about the glories with complete attention. Hanuman chants the following mantras. Purport: in the Puranas, there are 2 different opinions concerning Lord Ramachandra. In the Lagu Bhagavatam Rita, 534-36, this confirms the description of Manu, of the description of the incarnation of Manu. Vasudevadi rupanam avatara prakritita Vishnu dharmo tare rama lakshmanadaya kramadami padme tu ramano bhagavan narayana vitirita sheshas chakram cha sankhascha kramatsyor lakshmanadaya Madhya Desha Stita Yodhya Puresya Vasiti Smrita Mahavaikuntha Lokye Cha Raghavendrasya Kirtita. The Vishnu Dharma Uttara describes that Lord Ramachandra and his brothers Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna are incarnations of Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradumya, and Aniruddha, respectively. The Padma Purana, however, says that Lord Ramachandra is an incarnation of Narayan, and that the other 3 brothers are incarnations of Shesha, Chakra, and Shankha. Therefore, Srila Baladeva Vidyubhushan has concluded, Ta idam kalpa bedanaiva sambhavyam. In other words, these opinions are not contradictory. In some millenniums, Lord Ramachandra and his brothers appear as incarnations of Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradumya, and Aniruddha. In other millenniums, they appear as incarnations of Narayan, Shesha, Chakra, and Shankha. The residence of Lord Ramachandra on this planet is Ayodhya, Ayodhya city is still existing in the district of Hyderabad, which is situated in the northern side of the Uttar Pradesh. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyatyade Satarane. Here it mentions that we should hear about Krishna's glories with complete attention. Exactly where we are, where Jambudvip is, where Bardvarsha is, where Bhumandal is, makes no difference. The question is, where is our consciousness? That will make a difference. Whether we're in Narakaloka or Brahmaloka or Bardvarsha, it makes no difference. The question is, where is our consciousness? Similarly, we can discuss different topics in the Bhagavatam and fight with each other over them. The newest one is whether the earth is flat, whether it's round, and we can cite all kinds of examples and go on perpetually casting brahmastras at each other in the form of slokas. Take this sloka. Oh! Well, here's another one. But the Bhagavatam has given us principles. It's not really so concerned with details, because the Bhagavatam is discussing topics from time immemorial. And therefore it's taking different pastimes, different examples, and different universes. There are unlimited universes, there are unlimited Brahmas, Brahmas appearing and disappearing. There's like a flash of lightning in the sky. And it's been going on since time, practically time eternal. But there are examples, just like we have Bharata Maharaj. Then here's an example of someone who's at the beginning stage of Bhava Bhakti. He's in ecstasy when he's meditating upon Krishna. And yet he gave up his kingdom, which was vast. Who knows how big it actually was. Could be the whole Bhumandala, for all we know. Unlimited opulence. He gave it all up to go into the forest to realize Krishna, and he fell in love with a deer. I mean, even nowadays, people are perverted, but hardly anyone falls in love with a deer. Of course, he followed the principles with the deer, but... That's a different thing. Still, falling in love with a deer and giving up Krishna for a deer is rather inexplicable. But this is one example, since time eternal, practically, of a fall down because someone gave up Krishna consciousness for a deer. I mean, generally, you fall in love with someone, you become attracted to breaking the principles, or you want to go out and save the world with music. But falling in love with a deer, that's a little far out. Especially when you're the emperor of the whole world. But this is an example so that we become cautious, not that we think, I've become so advanced, I'm so Krishna conscious, nothing can stop me. I'm going right back to Godhead. Just like there was one famous or infamous personality, Rajneesh. You've all heard of Rajneesh? What's that? Osho. Osho. He was a brahmachari at one time. And he became a little proud. So he declared that no one can cause me to fall down. So he put an advertisement in the newspaper in India, Times of India, I challenge anyone to try and cause me to fall down. So one famous prostitute from Delhi came and took the challenge, spent the night with him. And then the next day, he wrote an article, Liberation Through Sex. So, what to speak of Bart? When one becomes a little proud, then immediately Maya will come and take one's consciousness away. Unless one is sincerely trying to take shelter of Krishna, then Maya will have a field day with one. It is not a question of what I've accomplished, what my position is. The question is how much of an intensity we have to take shelter of Krishna. Fortunately, in this age, we can pay attention to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his disciples' succession of devotees. Because if we do that, then automatically we get access to taking shelter of Krishna. Because their mood is intensely taking shelter of Krishna. Even in the spiritual world, everyone feels dependent upon Krishna and Krishna's devotees. There's no sense of independence. And the more we feel dependent, then the more we make spiritual progress. And the most intense person who feels dependent is Srimati Radharani. We may think, Srimati Radharani, she's the greatest gopi, she's Ladini Shakti, she has Krishna under her control, therefore she must be a little bit proud. But actually it's the opposite, that she feels the most dependent, and therefore she's the greatest devotee. She feels the most dependent upon Krishna. And even though so-called, sometimes she feels a little bit proud, in the pastime when Krishna took her away and during the Rasa dance into the forest and left all the other gopis, and all the other gopis were thinking she must be feeling a little proud. And then Srimati Radharani, she says, I'm feeling tired, can you put me on your shoulders? And then Krishna disappears, and she's lamenting. So it says that she feels proud, but I don't know if there's such a thing as Srimati Radharani feeling proud. In any case, there are pastimes that make it appear that it's something similar to our activities. In any case, then all the gopis come and they're criticizing her like anything. So even you go back to the spiritual world, don't think you're not going to be criticized. Even Srimati Radharani sometimes gets criticized. And even Krishna gets criticized. Of course, they do it all the time here, but even in Krishna's pastimes, he's criticized. When the Shamantaka Chul disappeared, then Satrajit started to criticize Krishna. He probably stole the jewel, and who knows what he did with it. So he started to spread rumors all over Dwarka. You think, oh, Krishna, he had Dwarka built, he's the king of Dwarka, everyone loves him, and here there's rumors against him. What to speak of ISKCON? There's, even in Goloka, well, at least in Dwarka, in this world, sometimes even there's rumors against Krishna that he's a thief. Of course, in Vrindavan he is a thief. But in Dwarka, he's not supposed to be a thief. And so Krishna didn't think, well, I said in Bhagavad Gita, equal in happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, I should just tolerate. Like I said in Bhagavad Gita, show a good example. You don't like, you know, you slap me on this cheek, Krishna says, all right, I'll turn my cheek, hit the other one. No, Krishna went out and immediately tried to defend his honor, and we went into the forest, found that Prasena had been killed by a lion, and the lion had been killed, and the Shyamantaka jewel had been taken away by Jambuvan. And so Krishna went into the forest, searched out Jambavan's tracks, came to the cave, went into the cave, and fought with Jambavan for 28 days and nights to get that jewel back. Or else Krishna just was in the mood of fighting. Depends how you look at it. And then he got the jewel and returned it so to protect his reputation. Of course, Krishna doesn't really care about his reputation, but he has to set the example. Because Krishna is a householder in Dwarka, and if Krishna's reputation is spoiled, then all of Dwarka would be spoiled. We're supposed to glorify Krishna, not criticize him. Unless you're in Gokul, then you can criticize him. All the ladies come and they complain that Krishna stole the butter. He harassed our children. And this is all pastime. They enjoy criticizing Krishna out of love. But Satyajit was not doing it out of love, he was doing it out of envy. So there is many varieties of pastimes. If Krishna is there, because Krishna is totally the form of bliss and knowledge, eternity, then whatever it may be, it becomes spiritual. And if Krishna's service is there, then one is actually doing spiritual service, if Krishna is the center. And we should hear with attention. Now we hear about Hanuman glorifying Lord Ramachandra. Hanuman is completely dependent upon Lord Ramachandra, completely 100%. But that intensity is only a fraction of the intensity of Srimati Radharani, feeling dependent upon Krishna and manifest in this world in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, we have a great opportunity just by doing a little service to the Sankirtan movement. We may think, oh, we're going out there, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're only selling a few books, relatively a few books. The only ones who seem to be excited, most excited about what we're doing are the dogs when they start barking. They seem to be most enlivened by our Sankirtan movement. But still we cannot really estimate this, even the attempt to take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, even paying a little attention to the Harinam Sankirtan, which is really exactly the same as participating in the Rasa dance with Krishna. But in a much more auspicious way for us, because this Rasa dance is helping us enter into service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Panchatattva, which will automatically give us intense feelings of separation and dependence upon Krishna, which will ultimately bring us back to the spiritual world, back to our original consciousness. So Hanuman's giving us chanting mantras, and these are also very auspicious, but nothing can equal the intensity of dependency that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, and nothing could be more auspicious in any time, in any universe, than the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And without going into any other controversies, any questions? Yes.
When you were reading, I was wondering, Prabhupada says that one goes to spiritual kingdom without difficulty. So when is that without difficulty part?
As soon as you get up to the platform of bhava, you pass through anartha, nivritti, ruchi, asakti. Once you get up to, what's that?
Part was in Brahma. He still had difficulty.
Such is love in the material world. Well, he is at the beginning stages of bhava, between asakti and bhava. So he didn't quite reach the actual platform of bhava. Because he can't, I mean, even from after ruchi, I mean, he's only one example, since time eternal, of anyone who got into that kind of difficulty. And that was due to the lack of association of devotees, it is said. But if we keep association with devotees, once we get up to nishta, then spontaneous love for Krishna, spontaneous devotional service begins. And once, especially at Ruchi, the taste is so much superior to any kind of material experience, there's no way anyone's going to give it up, because there's happiness at every moment that's always increasing. Then it becomes spontaneous and effortless. And that's really the beginning of actual devotional service. What we have difficulty is not because we're performing pure devotional service, it's because of the lack of purity in our devotional service. And it's not the devotional service that's difficult, it's our attachment to our anarthas and aparas that makes the difficulty. It's our material consciousness that causes the difficulty, not our spiritual consciousness. Anything else? Yes. Improve reading? Well, that's probably, it's a seminar, probably lasts a couple of weeks. But one thing is to pay attention. And if you want to know if you're paying attention, just read something. And then close the book and repeat it word for word. And if you can't repeat it word for word, it means that we haven't heard it. And if we want to hear it, then open the book. Read it again. And if you want to read it in such a way as to make it easier to hear it, then what you can do is visualize it. If you visualize it, then you're actually be able, if you can see it, you probably heard it. Now, if you really want to experience it so that you don't forget it, then put it into practice. Find out what is the message there and then put it into practice. And then you'll experience it. Once you experience it, it becomes part of your existence. And then you can't forget it. Especially if you connect it with the other parts of your experience. But first of all, we should read in such a way as that we actually hear it. So even if we don't, but the best, as I said, probably the best way of doing it is to actually visualize, seeing what we're hearing. Ukramantam siddhim vapi. Punjanava gunanvita vimuro nana pashanti pashanti gyana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand what kind of body they enjoy under the spell of the modes of nature. How a living entity quits his body, or what kind of body enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So we have to train our eyes with knowledge. We have to see through the scripture what's going on and then practice it, and then we'll experience it, and then we'll actually experience or see it completely. Not only theoretically, but by experience. Is that right? Anything else? Similarly, when we're listening, we should try to hear, see what was actually being said in such a way. The most important thing is how we can apply it within our lives for service. Then it actually has some meaning. And then if we apply it to our service, that's called surrender and service, then the result is that Krishna will reveal He'll reveal things to us. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande, Hari Bol.